Welcome to Romancing the Saints with Pastor Gene Pensiero. We're glad you're joining us as we study verse by verse through books of the Bible, discovering God's extravagant love for His people. Now we pick back up in 2 Samuel chapter 18, verse 19 through chapter 19, verse 8 in the second part of a study titled, The Bad News Bearers.
When I came up here, it took a lot of convincing that the group of people that wanted to have a Calvary Chapel in Hanford really needed one. And I was kind of antagonistic about it. I said, well, where are you guys going to church now? Well, we're driving to Visalia. Well, wow, really? It was like the end of the world? How far is that? Oh, it's about 20 miles. I drove 20 miles just to, you know, get down the end of my driveway in Southern California practically. Seriously, I used to drive 45 miles just to get to work. And then I drove around all day as an outside salesman. I drove 45 miles back. And in the winter, it was more like 100 miles because I had to find all these crazy back routes because routes were, you know, closed and all. So when they told me we have to drive, some of us, 25 miles, I thought, what a bunch of weenies, you know, and stuff. And then I said, so why don't you just find another good church in Hanford? And they didn't say there weren't any good churches. They said there are good churches, but there's nothing quite like a Calvary Chapel. Now, that was kind of news to me, too, because where I was at Calvary Chapel of San Bernardino, and there was a Calvary Chapel of Redlands was less than a mile away. Calvary Chapel of Rialto, and then was Fontana, and then there was Riverside, and then there was, you know, it seemed like there was a Calvary Chapel on every block. And when there were churches that were just like Calvary Chapel. And so it took me a lot of convincing to realize, hey, you know, here in the Central Valley, to drive from LNAS or even Hanford to Visalia to go to church, it's like going to another state, you know. It really is. I understand that. Now, to me, a trip, you know, to Save Mart is like, has to be planned for, you know. It's like, hey, we're out of milk. That's just too bad, you know. I mean, Save Mart, you know, I could walk there faster than I could, you know, but anyway, and so I understand that, and really, there are good churches in Hanford, but there wasn't, and I think there still isn't, anything just like Calvary Chapel with its particular approach to things, and so why duplicate effort? A lot of times, churches just, you know, a group of people really just says, hey, we want to do exactly what we're doing, but we want to do it. We want to be the ones that are doing it. And so they duplicate themselves. And, you know, God is gracious. I think that starts off, you know, as a split and something that really is not honoring to the Lord. But then over time, God, you know, he brings grace to the situation. And so don't duplicate effort. There's no reason to send out two messengers with the same message to the same place. Verse 23, whatever happens, he said, let me run. So he said to him, run. Then Ahimaaz ran by way of the plain, and he outran the Cushite. Ahimaaz insisted, zeal to serve the Lord is to be commended, but I think it needs to be tempered by obedience. Just because I want to do something doesn't mean I ought to do it. Joab let him go. We can't be sure why. Maybe he thought the Cushite had an adequate head start. By the time Ahimaaz arrived, there'd be nothing to tell, really. I will tell you one thing, it's hard to say no sometimes, especially to a persistent person. Still, it's better to say no if no is the answer. Aren't you always amazed, those of you who watch American Idol, at the early stages when these people come in and they say, I've been singing all of my life, and this is, you know, I was born to this, a star is going to be born, and they are awful. Now, I've decided in my heart that as much as I enjoy that, it's probably sinful for me. But then I say, hey, they're the ones that are saying they're good, and they're not. And so they sing, and they get stopped, and the judges, some of them try and be nice about it, and they, you know, and then they have a genuine reaction. You're sitting there thinking, they must know that they're awful. But they don't. They have a genuine reaction that, what's the matter with you? This is real talent, you know? And they, you know, they have fun with that and all that. But you know what the problem is? Somewhere along the line, all of their lives, those individuals have been told first by family, and then by friends, that they have talent. And right from the beginning, they should have been told, "You're awful." What? You want to end up on American Idol looking awful? Hey, I went to a worship conference one time. We took some of the teams down there years ago. And one of the sessions, a gentleman, I forget his name, but he was a Christian record producer and also a worship leader. And one of the key things he stressed, he says, hey, have auditions, and if people are awful, tell them they are awful. And everybody had that, oh, how harsh, how sad. Well, no, it's the best thing you can do for a person, because if you're an awful singer, if you can't really play the guitar, if you don't know what you're doing musically at that point in your life, then God has something else for you to be doing rather than trying to be Christian Idol and thinking that you have talent. And it doesn't matter that your mom and dad said you have talent. You don't. And somebody needs to tell you you don't have talent. And then people, now, I will say that everybody I've told you have no talent is no longer a friend of mine, but I'm a friend to them. I am a friend to them. And I stand by that. Now listen, I used to think I was going to be a famous singer. Hey, now, just a minute now. Okay. I'll tell you why. I'm going to tell you something that most of you don't know about me in my past. My oldest brother was a teen idol in Southern California. He went by the name of Tony Penn. And he never made the big time, but he recorded several records. He played at Pacific Ocean Park. He was on the Wink Martindale Show. How many of you even know what I'm talking about? He was on the Wink Martindale Show. As an up-and-coming singer, if you search the internet for Tony Penn, P-E-N-N, and the record, his famous record was King or a Fool, you can find sites that have clips of his singing King or a Fool. And so naturally I thought, Tony Penn, Gene Penn. Didn't really pan out for me, but that's the way. And so, no one told me, hey, you've got talent. You're more talented than your brother. No, they never said that because it wasn't true. My dad said, you need to go to college. If you have any hope at all, you need to get a degree. And then, of course, he's super disappointed in me now. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. So anyway, don't encourage people to do things they're not called to do. You need to step up to the plate, especially if you're in a position of authority, and with all the humility that you can muster, just say, you're awful. Think of something. Remember the expression, don't quit your day job? Use that. Now, Ahimaaz, he outran the Cushite because he knew a shortcut. Was that a good thing? Was that to be commended? In light of the fact that he will fail to properly deliver the message, taking a shortcut and getting there first wasn't a good idea. The obvious application for us in whatsoever we do for the Lord, wherever we do it, don't take shortcuts. The no shortcut principle applies to our devotional life. There's no shortcut to deepening our walk with the Lord, and it applies to all the things that we do for the Lord. Anybody can start well. It's finishing well that counts. Verse 24. Now David was sitting between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof over the gate to the wall, lifted his eyes and looked, and there was a man running alone. And the watchman cried out and told the king, and the king said, if he is alone, there is news in his mouth. And he came rapidly and drew near. Then the watchman saw another man running, and the watchman called to the gatekeeper and said, there is another man running alone. And the king said, he also brings news. Now, a lone runner would be a good sign. For one thing, it meant that the army was not retreating. And so something was happening in the battlefield, and they were able to send a messenger back. A second runner with additional news is really quite confusing in a time when you depended on messengers. So here's one guy, and here's another guy right on his tail. What happened between the time this first guy was sent out? It must be something monumental. So here's a guy with a message, but here's another guy with a message. And then you have to factor in, did one guy outrun the other? And so what's the message? It's going to be a confusion. In today's parlance, it's like sending out a message without the attachment. You ever do that? See the attach. Oops. No attachment, you know. And so what's the message? And so David says, well, I guess he also brings news. Again, I would stress that I think it can be better to support the first messenger rather than send another with the same news. We see this a lot on the mission field. We need to look for people to support who are already doing the work, already delivering the gospel, rather than establishing something new just because we want to. If there's a real need, a genuine leading, then go for it. But you don't need to be in the same place doing the same thing. It'd be better to support the person that's already doing it. Verse 27, so the watchman said, I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, oh, he's a good man. He comes with good news. Remember Chariots of Fire, Eric Little? He had that crazy running style where, you know, once he, you know, was going to win, he'd throw his head back and he would just run some crazy style that, you know, just he had to be the Lord, you know, because nobody can really run that way. And so Ahimaaz, he had his own style as a runner. And so when you saw him, you thought, well, that's the son of Zadok. Verse 28, so Ahimaaz called out and said to the king, all is well. And then he bowed down with his face to the earth before the king and said, blessed be the Lord your God who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. Okay, delivered up. What does that mean exactly? So the king said, is the young man Absalom safe? You know, you could be delivered up in a lot of different ways. You could be dead, you could be a prisoner. Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant and me, your servant, I saw a great tumult, but I did not know what it was about. And the king said, turn aside, stand here. So he turned aside and stood still. So ultimately, he absolutely fails in his mission. He brings the message first, after all his talk, and David wants to know, is Absalom dead? And he says, I saw a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff was going on back there. And David essentially, you know, says, okay, just stand over there. In other words, you're no help to me whatsoever. And so Ahimaaz fails. Maybe Joab initially said no to him because he knew David would interpret it as a sign that Absalom was alive and well, and he didn't want to give David a false hope and then deliver the bad news. Whatever reason, he fails. And so verse 31, just then the Cushite came, and the Cushite said, there is good news, my lord the king, for the Lord has avenged you this day of all those who rose against you. Now that's the truth. And the king said to the Cushite, is the young man Absalom safe? So the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you to do harm be like that young man. It's a nice way of saying, yeah, he's dead. He's like your enemies. What happened to him needs to happen to all your enemies. The truth is, I can't imagine a more concise, a more accurate, a more compassionate way to have delivered the message. You know, I'm kind of a student of how to deliver bad news. It's not easy. A lot of you had to deliver bad news. In my life, I've had to deliver more than my share of bad news. There's an art to it I haven't quite discovered yet. It's just difficult. This is a great delivery. Says, you know, because he keeps it into perspective. Absalom was an enemy. He doesn't just say, yeah, your son Absalom is dead. He was hanging in a tree and they speared him. You know, he says, no. May all the enemies of my lord the king be as this young man. Yeah, he's dead. He deserves to be dead, et cetera, et cetera. So very, very, a perfect delivery. As we're leaving this section, do you regularly assess your performance in the tasks that God has given you? You and I should. We should have a strong work ethic, whether it's at home or in the church, out at work or out in the world. In fact, it's good for us that the rest of the world is declining in their work ethic, because as we give 100% unto the Lord, we shine all the brighter. We, you know, people see, well, what are you doing? When 40% of the workforce is saying, yeah, I do the bare minimum to get by, and then you come in, whatever age you are, and you're doing 100%, somebody's going to ask you what that's all about, and you're going to be able to tell them that it's all about looking beyond the situation you're in and serving the Lord Jesus Christ who's alive and who you expect a reward from. It may not always be the most positive thing, people may start to ridicule you or complain or whatever, but it's easy evangelism, I think. Being a solid, 100% committed to the task person is easy evangelism because you're doing it for the Lord. Now, as we move on to chapter 19, you should analyze your submission and whatever callings God has entrusted to you. The aftermath of the news, David's son was dead. Regardless that Absalom had murdered his half-brother, that he had rebelled against David and declared himself king, that in the ensuing conflict, 20,000 Israelites had been needlessly killed, David loved him as a father and reacted to the news that he had lost not an enemy, but a son. Verse 33, chapter 18. And the king was deeply moved. He went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." What father would not rather die in place of his child? Part of us cannot fault David for his reaction. We love our children when they are disobedient, when they rebel against our leading. Even when they cause trouble, we're the ones that hang in there with them. We can certainly understand David's heart as a father. Ah, but David was more than a father. He was the king of Israel. He had a responsibility beyond being a father to his children, and that was being a shepherd to God's people. He did not have the luxury of ignoring his responsibilities as king to indulge his grief as a father even for a moment. Does that sound harsh? Maybe, but it's really true. We expect our leaders, people in positions of authority, to act responsibly and appropriately. We expect them to put aside their own feelings, their own grief or anger, to comfort and lead us. Do you remember after 9/11, looking forward to what the President of the United States would say to give comfort and hope to a nation that had been rocked? Doesn't matter who the president was, it happened to be Bush, but there was a national sense of somebody needs to address this. Someone needs to say something about this. You can't have the President of the United States getting on TV and doing a David here. Oh, I don't know what to do. I wish it was me and not them. What am I going to do? That won't do. I bet a lot of presidents have felt that way when they have to make these announcements about Pearl Harbor or 9/11 or whatever. And so we expect that. We look forward to that. And so it was David's job. It was David's responsibility, notwithstanding that he had lost his son that day. Joab was told, "Behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom." So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard it said that day, "The king is grieved for his son." The people stole back into the city that day as people who are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. The king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, "Oh, my son Absalom! Oh, Absalom, my son, my son!" David's reaction was turning the victory into defeat. His subjects felt ashamed rather than encouraged. Joab took it upon himself to confront David. I want to talk to Joab. Verse 5, it says, "Then Joab came into the house to the king, and he said, 'Today you have disgraced all your servants who today have saved your life, the lives of your sons and your daughters, the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines, in that you love your enemies and hate your friends. For you have declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants. For today I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died today, then it would have pleased you well. Now therefore, arise, go out and speak comfort to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, not one will stay with you this night. And that will be worse for you than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth until now.'" Wow is right. It's incredible. You gotta love Joab. As David's general, the people looked to him to act appropriately. So David wasn't acting appropriately. So they said, "Well, tell Joab. Joab, you need to do something." Have you heard the phrase "cowboy up"? Well, you have if you live in Riverdale. That's the motto of Riverdale, I think, you know. "Cowboy up" wasn't much known outside of rodeo circles until 2003 in the rest of the world. when it became the rallying cry for the Boston Red Sox. They had a couple of Texas players, Kevin Millar and Mike Timlin, and they injected this bit of rodeo slang into their campaign to stir up the team and its fans. They had a t-shirt back then that read, "Are you going to cowboy up or just lay there and bleed?" And the idea, you know, you get it. Man up is another expression that is more common. We use it to exhort people to step up and do what you're supposed to be doing. And that's what Joab does. He comes to David and he says, "You need to cowboy up. You need to man up. Quit this. You're the king." As I indicated, we expect our leaders to man up. What we need to do is realize that this same exhortation is to us as well in times when we are allowing ourselves, for whatever reason, to shirk our responsibilities in the callings God has given us. See, being the king of Israel, that was a calling that David had. Your calling, maybe it's being a husband or a father or a mother or a wife or a child in a particular family, an employer, an employee, or whatever it is. Those are roles, those are callings that God has given you. There's callings in the church as well. So if I'm called, let's say, to be a husband and a father, I need to man up and act like that no matter what I might be feeling otherwise. I need to understand that with the calling comes a responsibility. There's too much feeling in the church today. I'm not saying that we shouldn't love and show mercy and all of that, but there's too much of how I feel. Right now, I just don't feel like it. I don't feel like being a husband. It's so hard. It's so hard to be a mother these days. You know, I mean, and we get into this, and you know what? Joab ought to come to us and say, "What are you talking about? This is your calling. You don't have time to grieve. You don't have time to be disappointed or angry or discouraged or whatever it is that you're indulging. You don't have time for that. People are depending on you. You're going to turn a potential victory into defeat. You're going to be defeated, and all those around you are going to be defeated. Whatever you think is bad, you're going to make worse because you're not living up to the calling." You say, "Well, I can't do it." Oh, yes, you can. It's that you won't do it. Because the biggest part of this is that God doesn't give you any callings without also giving you the enabling, without giving you the power of the Holy Spirit to man up, to woman up, to cowboy up, however you want to put it. No matter how natural we may feel in terms of anger, discouragement, disappointment, we might feel trapped in a certain situation. No matter that, we are supernatural beings being prepped for eternity. We need to, and we're empowered to act the way God describes us in the Bible, in every one of our callings. It's a matter of submission to God in our calling. He knows what's going on in our homes or at work, in the church, out in the world at large. We need to look to Him in submission to His will and act like the men and women of God that we are. David reacted spiritually to Joab's exhortation. Verse 8, "Then the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told all the people, saying, 'There is the king sitting in the gate.' So all the people came before the king, for everyone of Israel had fled to his tent." Just like that, things were put right. It may not happen as quickly for you as it did for David, but you nevertheless are being encouraged to walk in the Spirit in your various callings. Live up to your responsibilities depending on God's empowering. That's a prerequisite to seeing things change. 1 Corinthians 16:13 is a verse we like to use for our men's ministry. It's, "Be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong." That's the New American Standard Bible. In the King James, I think it reads, "Quit yourself as men." And the idea is, act like a man. Act like a woman. Act like a Christian man, a Christian woman, or a Christian student or a Christian employee, or you get the idea. Man up, and you will find that the message of the gospel you are sent to deliver will be better received, better understood by those you've been sent to effect for good and for God. Let's pray together.
Pastor Gene has been serving in the Central Valley of California at Calvary Hanford since 1985. You can find hundreds more Bible studies by visiting our website at calvaryhanford.com. There you'll find video, audio, and transcripts of sermons just like the one you just heard. You can also find links to get Pastor Gene's books at calvaryhanford.com/books. We hope you'll join us next time on Romancing the Saints as we continue to discover that you are the passion of Jesus.